Jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to philosophy.
What up, everybody?
And welcome to another episode of
philosophy.
Hey. What up? What up? So, this is a very special day. Today we got a returning person, our main man,
John Jitsi.
What up, guys?
How's it going, man?
I'm good.
How's things?
Yeah, same old. Well, not really same old, but kind of same old. You know, like just living that quarantine life, missing you guys, missing jiu-jitsu.
We miss you too, man.
It's good to be missed and not forgotten.
How long have you been away from the podcast now?
Man, it's probably been like at least 6 months, maybe.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it feels like almost time is moving at a different speed these days.
Wow.
If that makes any sense. Yeah, that's how long I've been stuck in this room. I'm starting to say things like time is moving at a different speed.
Did your life change a lot during lockdown? Since the first lockdown?
With you guys, as sad as it sounds, the only thing that's really changed is jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this is going to sound really depressing, but that's one of the things, you know, like I get up in the morning and look forward to. And now that's kind of been taken away from me. But other than that, my day to day is pretty similar.
Yeah. Have you been keeping well?
I have been, you know, like, I think in these times it's super important for us to, take care of our mental health. And so I put like a real emphasis on, doing meditation and all that good stuff. As you know, we were talking prior to the podcast, I'm really into, the Wim Hof method. So I've been keeping up with that.
Are we going to dedicate some time to this Wim Hof method? Because I feel like we skirt around the edges of it and I'm just like...
So I've been trying to get in touch with people that are actually experts on it to enlighten Ollie. So he can ask all the questions he has that we can't answer him because we're sort of beginners at it, right?
John, I don't know if you know, but I've decided I'm going to go on a spiritual journey.
That's amazing. Tell me more.
Well, yeah, like I just feel my mind is closed off to certain things that could be beneficial in my life. So I'm going to try and keep an open mind and pursue some spiritual avenues.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not progressing as quickly as I'd hoped.
I mean, he's cut his hair.
I've cut my hair.
So he's letting go.
That's I made a list. I made a list of things I think would be beneficial. All right, hang on, let me find it. I've listed it under spiritual journey. There are five things on my list. I'm going to go for some Reiki, some healing energy stuff. I'm going to go see a medium.
Ooh.
Ooh. I'm going to go do the Lido, do some Wim Hof stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do some hypnosis as well.
Love it. I love all those things.
I thought you were going to start with, like, I'm going to do 5 minutes of meditation. You're like way towards the deep end.
Let's dive in.
I was actually...
That's 0 to 100, big time.
Yeah.
Medium, like that. That's like you jump like first grade. You went straight.
We've spoken about like not mediums, but like we've spoken about like shamans and voodoo, and like you were telling me about like how where you're from, there's like people that believe in it, like really believe in it, and then people that don't believe it. But even the people that don't believe it are like, nah, you don't mess around with that stuff, bro.
You know, it's crazy. I was having this conversation a few days ago. Iona, our big homie. What's up, Iona? She did my chart. How do you call it?
Like an aura.
No.
Like a reading?
No. Like with your sign. Star sign?
Oh, your star sign.
Yeah, but like she did like a... I think it's a astronomical chart. I'm butchering it, but she did that. And
but didn't they change? We had this conversation. They changed. Yeah, there's a new one.
So apparently it's fine. Like that's how
apparently it's
that's,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
phew, they're still in business.
apparently that's how off the loop we are, Ollie. So she did the chart, and it was kind of creepy. how accurate a lot of the things were, sort of like about like my upbringing and stuff like that. I was like, how do you know this? It's like, I don't know, I'm just reading, I'm feeling it.
Oh my god, is that Iona?
Yeah, that was Iona. But then,
sorry,
and then a few days, I'm gonna tell you a story about another dream. I had another dream.
Another dream?
Yeah, I had another dream. Not so recent, but it's been a while back. And ever since, this has been reoccurring. It's been almost like a year. I dreamt with a bear, bro. I was like in this huge field. I was in this open field. And I'm walking, and I found these mountains. And like on top of the mountain, there was like a gold house. I go to the gold house. I knock the door. I still have this picture clear in my mind. And a butler opens the door, but he was like judging me the way he was looking at me. I walk in, and inside it was all pitch black, like an abandoned house. And all of a sudden, a bear attacks me.
Did you win?
No, the funny thing is, you know my gi, the one that I put like the capulana, the traditional Mozambican cloth inside? It was wearing my gi.
It was wearing your gi?
Yeah, the bear was wearing my gi.
How did it get your gi?
Wow.
Good point, because first it was a big bear, and then like when I saw the gi, it was like a bear with like a human size. So like we were wrestling, the bear like mounted me, but like rather than trying to choke me, was trying to eat my face. And then all
that's
of
not IBJJF legal.
I know, it's like
and then the ref stepped in.
Funny enough, it wasn't a ref, but like this angel, there was like a blonde angel, came in and like sort of like slowly landed behind him and just started like patting him, and then they hugged, and the bear like kind of calmed down. Creepiest shit ever.
Right.
A day later, this could be like some, you know, like the Google spies, but a day later, I go and I'm on
you
Pinterest.
You get an Instagram targeted ad for a golden house.
No. I'm on Pinterest, right? And just like looking at pictures and stuff, and look at what I find.
A tattoo of a bear hugging a woman with long hair like an angel.
Pretty much. Wow. I don't know if you can see it, John.
It's a sign.
I see it. I think it's time for you to get that tattooed on your thigh.
I don't know about that, but but
who would win, you or a human-sized bear?
I think the bear is really strong. I would have to train with it before, because I don't know how you deal with the claws.
That's true.
I think the bear is very stiff, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you can get around the bear, if you could get to the bear's back, any chance of the bear like turning quickly? Whatnot, no, you're not feeling it.
Well, like if you shoot in on like a low single.
I think I would go for like some sort of arm drag.
Your butt, like you're like.
I'm just like, I'm not sure how much his strength diminishes when it becomes our size.
Nah, bro. Like some gorillas are our size. I'm pretty sure they're strong.
Yeah, like a chimpanzee.
Yeah, like
very strong.
It's like, I remember Joe Rogan telling this story about a small monkey. I think it was like a small chimp, like a baby chimp. And he grabbed the chimp and he was like, oh my God, I thought this was going to be like a little person.
It's really strong.
Yeah, it's really strong. Like, he felt the strength of a small chimp.
They have to be. I mean, like, if you look at all monkey family, like, just the way that they use their own body weight, you know, like climbing trees and things like that, it's just incredible. The things that they can do that we can't do.
Yeah. Like,
next level.
Sort of like how they use their other limbs as well, just like for the basic things of the daily life. Sorry, guys. I got to get back to this.
The bear.
Like, here's like why like this was related to spirituality. There's like this old thing about you having an animal totem and an animal spirit kind of thing that protects you or something like that. That's one thing that I had to open my mind to. So I started embracing the bear.
You're the bear.
No. It's like I have a bear protector kind of thing. You know.
How did you get that?
You
get to choose.
No, you don't get to choose. The spirit chooses you. So, like, the bear appeared in my dream. And ever since, I've been seeing bears everywhere. That was the first, like, example.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so it's, like, trying to embrace the bear spirit.
How do I get one?
Bro, you got a dream with a blonde angel and a bear wearing your gi.
It's Chinese New Year at the moment. It's the year of the ox, I think.
Yeah.
What are you? Does anyone know what you are?
I don't know.
I'm a snake.
You're a snake?
Yeah, I'm a
snake. Let me look real quick. What do you search? What is my Chinese?
What is my Chinese animal? Yeah, I'm a snake. I think I get on with dragons and maybe roosters.
It's funny you talk about the whole animal thing. Like for some strange reason, my my grandma was like super into owls. She had a whole owl thing, and it's kind of just stuck in my family. So maybe
you're an owl.
Yeah, I'd take that. I like the owl thing. Let me see. Oh, it's based on your year. Okay, I'm not going to give away my year. I'm feeling particularly old today.
it's based on your birthday. And then, like, every 12 years, you get, like, your year.
I'm a horse.
You're a horse?
I'm a horse.
So well, how does it go? The Chinese?
Yeah, go, like, Chinese. What is my
it says,
Chinese?
Here animal. It says based on the year you were born.
Yeah.
Chinese animal, 1990.
You're born in 1990.
I'm a horse too.
You're a horse too.
Oh,
that
wow.
That makes sense.
Well, I like bear way more. I don't know why.
Horse.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to pick my own animal. How about that?
That works. So, what would you pick? An owl?
Yeah, I think I'd pick an owl. I think I am owlish. I'm not very strong, but I'm a bit, you know, maybe crafty, potentially wise.
Potentially wise.
Potentially.
How about that?
Depending
potentially.
On the day.
So. I have a question, right? The question is, when do you know, like sort of like with the things that are more important to you in life, right? When do you know what are the things that are worthwhile compromising and the things that you have completely no compromising in? Like, for example, let's say jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
It is... main staple in your daily life, and you have to for some reason get a job or do something else that does not allow you to train jiu-jitsu, or you get in a relationship and your significant other is like, I love you, and you gotta choose. Where at what point, like at what point do you make those decisions about, for you at least, what would make you stop training jiu-jitsu?
Man, this is so funny you mentioned this, because I had this exact conversation with a girl I'm seeing last night. And she was like really understanding. She was like, yeah, I'd never want you to make that decision. She was like, but if there was something that was really important to me, that really mattered, I would expect to come first in a healthy relationship. But she's like, I'm flexible, and like if you have your schedule and you're going to be going and training, then I wouldn't want to stop that from you, because then you just end up resenting me for it. So weird, we've mentioned
forever.
That. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I never let it slide. But I think that's fair, isn't it? Like, you don't want to feel second place to something in someone's life. Like, you want to feel valued and stuff, and there's give and take and compromise. But like, if something is really important that you have to be there, then of course it has to come. But it's like healthy to have a balance and a mix. So I think if you are with someone and they're saying you can't do that, question whether that's really right for you.
So Iki, though, is your question more specifically about jiu-jitsu, or is it more about how do we determine in our lives how do we prioritize the things in our life that we find important? Like, where does this prioritization come from?
Let's start with jiu-jitsu as an example, and then we will expand to the more all kind of way of seeing things as you...
Yeah. And is the question more like, what would make me give up jiu-jitsu?
Yeah. Let's say that.
Fine.
Not really. I think it's more about like priorities. I think like, how do you pick the most important from the less important things? It's just like, time is so finite, right? Like, there are so many few things we can do, and there are few that will matter more than others. And I was just using jiu-jitsu as an example.
I think for a lot of people, it has to do with, maybe I'm speaking about myself, but I think with a lot of people, we tend as humans to plan our future and how we want our future to look like. And let's take jiu-jitsu. Maybe you plan to continue growing in jiu-jitsu and reach a certain stage in your jiu-jitsu. Maybe it's about a black belt, or whatever goals you have in jiu-jitsu. And you prioritize you doing jiu-jitsu based on how it's going to fit into your goals for your life. thing. I don't know if that made any sense. It made perfect sense in my head, but as I'm saying it, I'm like, what am I saying? That
makes sense.
It does.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
If
what are your jiu-jitsu goals at the moment, John?
I mean, at the moment, it's just to get back to training, but I always have the goal of getting my black belt. Jiu-jitsu for me, I've said this since like probably our first podcast ever, was that jiu-jitsu is just part of my life. And so like, I think that's one of the things that's helped me remain somewhat stable during this time, not being able to train, is that I know that jiu-jitsu is always going to be in my life. So if I have to pause at this point, it doesn't worry me as much as it may have done in the beginning when I first started doing jiu-jitsu. Now I know, as somebody who's, you know, like lived through 8-month setbacks, things like that, through injury or whatever, I know that just because I'm off the mats for an extended amount of time doesn't mean that I can't return to the mats and still get my jiu-jitsu back and still keep going, still keep progressing. Just part of my life. It's like it's a religion to me. I'm always going to, jiu-jitsu is always going to be there. It's not going anywhere. So
what other stuff do you have in your life that you have to like balance the priorities with?
I mean, I guess as I'm getting older, maybe the things like potentially starting a family. I know, crazy.
A little John Jitsu Jr.
Let's not jump ahead.
John Jitsu Jr., the Triple J.
Yeah, let's let's take a step back for a second. But you know, like even things, you know, setting roots somewhere and starting to plan how my life will be as a full on adult. It's not just living day to day anymore.
I think that's hard. Like, we got some training partners, don't we, that have family and kids, and like there's definitely a cap on what they can realistically come and do.
Like, for sure.
Like a handful of the morning lot that I think of that really struggle with it. It does change your priorities drastically, right? When you have a dependent, like someone who literally lives because of your actions.
I think it's actually not so much about time. It's probably more about energy levels. I think, you know, having a small child definitely drains your energy, and the idea of getting up at 6 a.m. when you've been woken 4 times by your crying child.
And also, like, if you're gonna go do jiu-jitsu on the weekend, like especially in those early developmental years of your kid, like you're gonna miss some really important stuff, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
And also, but I think the thing about changing priorities, it might happen automatically. It's not like you're thinking, oh, this is my priority now. It's like you might be on the mats and you're thinking, oh, you're thinking about your kid, you know, like most part of the time. And yeah, and then slowly you just start spending more time with him rather than in the mats, on the mats.
It's true. And I can't predict how my priorities will change after having, you know, like a child. But I know that now in my current state of life, I just know from experience and having been around jiu-jitsu so long, my love for jiu-jitsu hasn't really changed in quite a long time. So I feel like confident in that, you know, it's not a phase or something.
It's resolute.
Yeah, word.
Good. How about you, Iki?
About me what? Can you repeat the question? Sorry, I forgot.
You asked the question. How do you prioritize your stuff and what you do?
It's very hard. I find I like to think about my either sort of like the end of my life, you know, sort of like if there was a 100-year-old birthday or if it was my funeral and people were making speeches about me, what would I like to hear? You know, sort of a lot of like, like he's like, oh, he was amazing at jiu-jitsu. And then my mom comes and she's like, ah! She doesn't even have anything to say about
me. I never saw him because he was always at jiu-jitsu.
Right. So that kind of gives a bit of perspective also because of how far it is, at least in my mind. I mean, it could be any point. But it's like, it kind of puts in perspective of, this is more important than this a little bit for me. And also, in terms of what makes me feel more alive.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting one, for example, with jiu-jitsu. Technically speaking, I know enough jiu-jitsu now to perhaps defend myself.
Nah.
Technically, right?
Bro, I'm joking, definitely. Yeah.
But then I could train and to train enough to just be able to defend myself, maybe I it doesn't need as much time and attention as I devote to it. Not just time on the mats, but outside the mats, thinking about it, watching instructionals and all these things. It's like, I'm not going to use lapel guard.
Whoa.
You know, on a...
steady.
Yeah, on a... Hey,
easy, boss.
On a self-defense. So in terms of practicality, like straight practicality, I've crossed the mark already. Now it's like something that makes me want to get out of bed, makes me more creative. When I'm on the mats, I have like the best ideas ever, like ideas like for work, ideas for my other creative pursuits. And I mean, some of my closest friends are now part of my jiu-jitsu life, right? Mm-hmm. So there is so much in it that really counts to me. It's like, how good does it make me feel? It's like so not just good, but how alive does it make me feel?
Mm. It's quite a personal thing, right? Like how one person values one thing, someone else isn't going to necessarily value another thing. So like, I think it's about guiding principles. And I think if it makes you happy, like, then why wouldn't you want to invest a lot of time in that? I guess it's how far you're willing to go, right? Like how much else you're willing to sacrifice in the pursuit of something. And if it makes you happy, that's fantastic. If you want to be like a world champion, that's a different matter altogether, right? Then you're going to have to sacrifice a lot.
But even I think the thing is like, even in an adult life, even in just making you happy, you still have to sacrifice a lot.
Yeah.
Like in terms of, just think of how many things you have to do, how many places you have to go, how many friends you have. If you want to do jiu-jitsu or anything that you care, because it's like, if you don't do it, nobody's going to be like, why aren't you doing this? You know, like, you should go to jiu-jitsu. It's like, it's literally between you yourself.
I suppose it's like anything. It gets a bit obsessive, right? Like, you start doing jiu-jitsu and then you're like, maybe I should start doing some like weight training. And then it's like, maybe I should start doing some stretching or some yoga or some like movement stuff.
And I think that's an important point, right? Like, I think when it comes to longevity and priorities with jiu-jitsu, it's like, it's so easy for us to, you know, look on Instagram or whatever and see these like amazing jiu-jitsu guys who are training all day, every day, winning all the tournaments and whatnot. To me, jiu-jitsu is something that's just fundamental to like a happy life. And it doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu for everyone, obviously. I think you need to like look after yourself mentally. You need to mentally grow. You need to be in the pursuit of knowledge in some field, whatever it be, whatever you like, whatever you're interested in. And I think you need to pursue, you need to grow physically. And that's some sort of exercise, whatever it may be. And I think those two things are very fundamental in living like a happy life. Yeah. And so I think it's easy for us. It should be essential for us to prioritize these things.
Man, Josh Hinger was saying that, wasn't he? Josh Hinger was like, I'm so glad I got to travel before all the jiu-jitsu stuff. And he's like, I train with these guys who are like ranked in the top of the top jiu-jitsu athletes who have been lucky enough to travel but haven't had those experiences. He was like, he only ever wanted experiences. And he said he actually ranks travel first, then jiu-jitsu, but he's just lucky that jiu-jitsu allows him to travel. But he's all about experiences. That was his whole thing.
I love that. I thought that was a great podcast, by the way. Well done, guys.
Thanks, man. We've really notched things up a level here at Jewlosophy.
I know, you really have. I mean, I loved it. I think I don't know if you're listening to this, Josh Hinger, but I thought...
God, I'd love to think he was. I'd love it. It would make my year if I thought...
What up, Josh?
Yeah, if he is, big fan. And I thought it was like super interesting to hear his life story. And
did you see as well, Tesla stock dropped below 800? Those jokes.
Dang. You know, one thing that I struggle with, I think that life balance is bullshit.
Do you reckon?
Like in a sense of, it's bullshit in a sense that it's that universal. I think people are very different and it's all about choices. Like sort of like, if you spend more time at jiu-jitsu than more time, I don't know, with your family. It's like, it is a choice that you're making and it's a very difficult choice. The same way that if you spend more time with your family and you don't spend that time at jiu-jitsu, and it's more about like that particular person being able to like accept the responsibilities of that choice that he's making, like sort of like
yeah.
accepting that, man, this is it, like I am going to live with this. It's like at the end I'm gonna have to live with this. But the whole thing about, like, you know, I got balance in my life, and I got this, and I got this, and I got this. The more I try it, the least it's like the least close I feel to it. It's like it's almost like a myth. It's almost, I'm always moving towards it, but I never arrive. It's like a mirage, right? But when I accept that, man, for example, in school, when you have exams and you're like, you know that the next month is going to be mad, and just go with that mad month, you miss birthdays, you miss all these things, and then you come back. It's just like, it feels more real about like stuff like that. And when I look at the life of many people, one example is always like Nelson Mandela, right? Nelson Mandela changed the world. Spent almost 30 years in jail. But that was such a hard choice. Meaning, at any point in those 30 years, there was always someone coming to him like, hey, let's make a deal. You can go out. After those years, 20-something years.
27, I think.
Yeah, 27. His kids were grown. They had no relationship to him.
Yeah, that's sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah, right. That's like one choice that he made, and that's what his life was about. So it's like there are many decisions when he was in that cell that he had to accept that, this is going to be my life, but this is where I'm going. So the life balance thing, I think it sounds amazing at self-help seminars.
I'd probably agree with you that you can never really achieve it. But like, I like the idea of do what makes you happy. Like if you're spending all your time in jiu-jitsu, but at the back of your mind, you're like, I kind of feel guilty for not seeing the people around me and the family. Like, then that's kind of on you, right? Like you are making the choice to go do jiu-jitsu and not see your family. On the flip side, if you're totally cool with it, like, and that's okay as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it comes down to like knowing yourself.
Yeah,
like,
be honest with yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Why are you spending all that time at jiu-jitsu? Is it because you feel like this is truly your life's purpose and your life's passion? If so, great. If you're just doing it because of some artificial goal.
Yeah.
That you've made up.
Just be like, like Coach always says, like, you can tell people that, like, you're okay with it. But if in deep down you know you're not, then you're lying to yourself, like.
Yeah.
And I think a hard thing about the truth is that the truth is not permanent, right? Like,
yeah.
Right now, like, you could go all in and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I actually miss my family now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like.
Was it Winston Churchill said, if nobody changed their mind, nothing would ever get done.
Yeah.
I just think day to day, I try and do choices. I try and do choices where, like, if I look back on it, I'll be happy with it. Like, and I try and come to a conclusion where I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm happy with this. I'm comfortable with this. People might not like it, but me, I am comfortable with this.
That's a really hard one. Like, I think when I was younger, I used to struggle a lot with trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
Like, and sort of like, as I got older, it's like, I just realized, like, man, I'm living with the consequences of all these happy people. You know, sort of like afterwards, after you make a decision based on trying to make everyone happy, it's like, oh, I'm the one who has to deal with, everybody's happy now. But like, there is this whole thing that happens after whatever decision you made.
I think it's tough. Yeah. I think it's hard. Like, there are some decisions I've made which my friends have openly said, like, that was a very stupid decision. And yeah, if I could go back, I would still make that decision because it was right for me and I felt okay with it given this, like, the circumstances I were in. Mm. I were in. Rubbish English.
But that's a good feeling, though. Like, knowing that you did what was right for you.
Yeah. I think so. But then again, it's me. I wouldn't have the objectiveness to know it if it was the wrong decision.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the thing. That's one of the hard things of wisdom. It's like, man, it's like so many of the mistakes. It's like don't play with fire if you don't want to get burned.
Yeah.
But if you want to know what is actually fire and what isn't, you got to get burned first kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. What hard decisions have you had to make? What hard decisions have you had to make? And like, what was your whole, like,
Jesus, they all process? They all above PG-13, honestly.
Man.
Yeah, like, this is for off the podcast. I'm thinking.
John, have you got any you can share?
Yeah, I mean, they're not the most exciting ones in the world. I mean, just let's see. Like, I'm sitting in London right now. That's a huge decision. Yeah, that was a big one, you know, moving from
America. What swayed it for you?
Yeah, you know, life's short, man. And it's like, especially in America, you see so many people who have never lived outside of America. And it's, yeah, it's just given me a whole new perspective on life and culture and things like that. And yeah, I wasn't sure that I wanted to do it, but I knew that I would appreciate the experience no matter where it led me. So it actually wasn't that hard of a decision, but you know, leaving your home country is difficult no matter how you slice it. So that was a hard one.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
What about you?
I dropped out of uni first time.
Ooh.
Yeah, after 2 weeks. And like really like was in a complete like dilemma.
What did you go in uni for that first time?
I went to Salford, which is Manchester. Mm-hmm. And I did like performing arts and media. And I kind of figured I wanted to do that. And then when I got there, I just like knew it wasn't right. Like everything wasn't right about it. The university, the course, like where I was staying and stuff. But like I had this real massive fear of like, I don't want people to think I failed. Like I don't want people to think like, oh, he thought he knew what he was doing and then like dropped out. But like, I'm actually okay with the fact that I just wanted to go and do it and I had no idea. I didn't think about it properly. I did fail at it. Mm. I tried it and failed. And then like, this is why I always come back to like listening to like the little voice in the back of your head. Cause the whole time in the back of my head, I was like, I've always wanted to do film. And then I remember sitting in this like really horrible like university halls in one of those like horrible tower blocks. I remember Googling like film studies courses and then like Exeter came up and I was like, man, I'd never get into Exeter. And then I'd gotten the requirements and I was like, oh man, like I might just apply. So then I dropped out of uni, did a year off, reapplied, got into Exeter and then like went from there.
Wow.
And like completely changed direction.
That changed like the course of your life, bro. You wouldn't be sitting here.
Nah. And I very nearly stayed. Because I someone gave me some advice, like, you know, you should just really try and stick it out. Mm. Like, you should really see how, like, you get on and stick it out. And then as soon as they said that to me, I was like, nah. And I don't know why that put me off so bad. I think it's because it made me realize how little I wanted to be there.
Yeah. Don't tell me what to do.
Literally.
I thought of something PG-13 that happened. I think that are two things. First is, bro, like, in my city, there is, like, a very big problem, which is, I think if you're... From the time you're 13 till 14, 15, if you don't drink, you don't have much of other entertainment.
Mm, it's kind of similar in...
Not just your city.
Yeah. it's just like... So I think in my group of friends, I was always the only one who never drank.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but
the thing... Just hot chocolate? Just hot chocolate.
Just hot chocolate. But the thing is...
Like really hot chocolate, though.
I remember the first time we hung out and I was like, do you want a beer? And you were like, nah, hot chocolate.
And that was really important because it taught me like, I remember past like first, it starts like 13. We all like everybody's getting fucked up. And then we get to 18, 19, 20. I remember, I think we were like 19 or 20 and we went to have New Year's like by the beach.
Yeah.
And it's like we all rented a house and we all there.
Yeah.
But it was a different, it was like my friends with some other people's friends. It was like a different group. And I was waking up at 4 a.m. to meditate and then go for a run and then we'd all go party. But like, that was like consistent. And why was it's like, my friends are like, the guys that are not my friends. They were like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Right.
Yeah. Cause you're different.
Exactly. And then I remember one time, everybody's like having a drink. It's like, hey, don't try to drink. I'm good. Just drinking my water after my meditation at New Year's. And then the guy goes like, bro, your friend is a bit weird. And then my friend said, nah, it's not weird. That's just him. I think that was like really important for me in the sense of it taught me not to sort of like try to fit in. Yeah. It's like the people that like will be good friends or like accept me as I am or stuff like that would be okay.
I had the opposite that. Growing up. I like really tried to do whatever I could to fit in, which is like one of the things I look back and wish like, oh man, I just like wish I was myself. Like, but it's so hard when it is, especially in those like teenage years, where like kids are kids and like it's bad, but yeah, it's like a big thing. I really wanted to just like not stand out in any way.
And it's hard because like I didn't want to stand out either, but like of course I would, like, so why waking up at 4, bro? It's yeah. Like, you know, like we just came from the club and yeah, it's tough, man. I think growing up, it's...
We had one guy that didn't drink at university, and he used to go out wearing headphones because he didn't like the music the clubs played.
What a legend. An absolute legend.
And the thing is, I'd be like, oh, Ben, did you have a good time? And he's like, I had a great time.
Great music. Yeah. Great music tonight.
Imagine if he didn't. DJ was a bit rubbish tonight.
But if I find like also like the kids that they're really comfortable in their skin growing up, all the other kids in school like kind of have a friction with them. I remember the school where I used to study, when I went to like elementary to high school, it was the school where my older sister used to study. She never ever tried to fit in. Really? And she was like, since she was a kid, she always felt like, this is who I am. Yeah. I know who I am. And it's like the weirdest thing.
But that's the thing though, people that are come from their own skin are the ones that are like, oh yeah, that's like the goal. But people who deliberately try not to fit in, they're actually just,
yeah,
like they're not being themselves either.
It's true, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Like, cause they're like, oh no, I'm not, I don't think that.
Yeah, it's like, do you?
But then I think like the people who are comfortable in their own screens, they might have a harder time growing up because they're like, I don't like those people. So like they really don't try anything at all. And the other ones are like, sort of like, what do you think? Do you think there is anything wrong with us or something like that?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
What kind of kid were you at school, John?
Oh, man. I think I... Let's talk about like high school, maybe. I think that's probably the most, you know, formative time.
Yeah.
I think I was super lucky because I had a group of friends who, you know, we were just comfortable together. You know, and we didn't really care that much about the other people, if that makes sense. You know, like I was cool enough in my friend group and that was good enough for me. And it seemed to be good enough for my friends. And I think people respected the fact that, you know, we kind of did our own thing. And yeah, so in that sense, I was lucky. I didn't necessarily have to try to like fit in or be anything other than myself in that sense. But, yeah, you know, like good.
That's decent.
As a teenager, you know, everyone's trying to be cool and everyone's trying to fit in as yeah. It is. So, but yeah, when I look back on those times, I think I got super lucky because if it wasn't for my group of friends, you know, I think I would have been probably trying to fit in much harder than I had to.
Mm. Knowing myself. Do you guys have all younger cousins, siblings that like you?
Man, I got
guys?
My mum's one of six and then three step brothers and sisters as well, so I think there's 25 immediate cousins. Wow. And then there's a lot of like divorces and remarriages, so I think immediate family, if you go from like my nana, there's like 80 people.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's wow. Huge. That's great.
It's gone past the point of ever getting them together in the same room again. Like it's so wow big.
I have a really small family. Dude. Compared to that. Yeah I mean, I've got my younger brother. I think Iggy, were you asking maybe like if I was at school or anything like that with siblings?
No, I was asking like now, like because like now it's like you look at all these experiences different, and like I wonder like if they ever come to you for advice or if you ever like look at them and you see like, oh, look at him doing what I was doing.
Nah.
You know, what's really funny for me is that my brother is 2 years younger than I am, and so we overlapped in high school.
Your famous brother.
My famous brother, yes. that's another funny story. But yeah, so he was always kind of like famous in that sense. So it was funny when he started in high school, he became like very cool, quote unquote, popular or cool for his grade. And he was always popular. Even like the kids in the older grades still thought my brother was super cool and popular. And so like, people almost gave me a little bit more respect because he was my younger brother, which is just funny because normally you think of it the other way around, you know, like the older brother being maybe the cool one or whatever, and people will respect the younger brother a little bit more because of his cooler older brother. For me, it was the complete opposite. They were like, okay, we'll tolerate the older brother, because my brother was so much cooler than me.
Did he start his YouTube channel up during high school?
And the first time he did YouTube stuff was probably like fifth or sixth grade. I don't know what that is in UK terms, but that's like, it was like 12 or something.
Yeah, that would have been like as soon as you start high school for us.
Oh, no, no. High school for us is 15 to like 19.
Okay.
So, but yeah, he was making videos and things like that from a very young age.
Now he got in early then.
Yeah, no, he didn't post anything on YouTube. I don't even know if YouTube was a thing back then. But he was making like prank videos and things like that.
What a guy.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's quite crazy. Also, like when you look at the amount of people that make stuff and it just goes unnoticed and unseen. And it's actually good, but won't get anywhere. It's hard.
How do you stand out in an oversaturated market?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. It's crazy.
But he's doing all right, isn't he? Yeah. He's doing well.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's done it. But I'm saying, yeah. I mean, maybe we could ask him, but I personally have no idea.
Man, maybe we should get him on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he'd do it if he can fit us into his busy schedule. He barely has time to call me back these days.
He was talking about wanting to come to the UK, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he does. He definitely does. It's funny because he did do some pranks. For those who are listening and don't know, my brother is, as Ollie said, I guess semi-famous. He's got millions of subscribers on YouTube. I don't know if that makes you famous, but, you know, he's got a following.
He gets recognized. You get recognized.
Yeah, it's true. He has come to the UK and done some of his like prank video stuff, and it's just British people just didn't, you know.
Doesn't travel well.
No, it doesn't travel. They don't really put up with that kind of stuff as well. But he wants to come back and spend some time and
that'd be cool.
Maybe give it another go.
Would you ever want to be famous?
I think the level that my brother's famous is good.
Yeah.
Like, when he goes out to the store and stuff like that, he gets recognized and maybe one or two people will want to take a picture, and that's okay. Even him, it's interesting to see because he's kind of like, I wouldn't say over it, but it's not exciting anymore the way it was in the beginning. Yeah. I remember like when he first started popping, as the kids say, and someone would come up and be like, oh my God, you're Steven. He'd be like, he'd try and play it cool, but then as soon as they'd walk away, he'd be like, oh my God, did you see that? But now it's just kind of like people come up and they're like, oh my God, can I take a picture? And he's like, yeah, sure, no worries, take a picture. And then he doesn't even say anything about it anymore. Like if I'm with him and that happens, after the person's walked away, he doesn't say anything. We just keep walking and it's like part of his day.
Yeah.
And that seems kind of crazy to me. I could never imagine like people coming up to me wanting to take pictures and not be like, wow, that was cool, or wow, that was annoying, whatever your reaction may be. So I don't know if I'd want to be famous, to answer your question. I don't know.
You can't. Have you seen that video of Ronaldo having tea?
No.
He goes to some restaurant in Spain, in Madrid, and he orders the tea arrives, and he's just trying to get the tea from the table up to his mouth, and he's interrupted so many times.
Oh my God.
Really?
Yeah, it's mad. But I think also like for that level of success, it's not for everyone. It's just like, yeah. I think for you to remain sane, like, I think Ronaldo himself, he was talking about, because I think he's like the most famous athlete, right?
I mean, he's got to be in right now, a shout, right? Hasn't he?
Yeah. So he was talking about it in the sense of like, the way he lives is like, he lives with his whole family, like his mom. It's a sort of, it's almost like a closed circle outside of that. But I think someone asked him in an interview, what was the greatest moment of like the past 10 years or like one of your favorite memories? Is like this one night that I went to the club with a costume or something, hiding like with a fake beard and so on, and nobody recognized me for 10 minutes. And for 10 minutes, I just had the best time of my life. until one guy was like, "Hey, are you Ronaldo?" And that's I think that's another level, man.
Did you see David Beckham when he did that? He went riding motorbikes places. I think he played like football in like seven continents or something, and he was riding motorbikes, and he was in some remote part. I think it was like the Philippines, and they didn't know who he was. So he was able to just sit in a cafe with his mates and have a beer, and he was like, "Yeah, that feels pretty great."
Wow.
Yeah,
that seems too much for me.
But then that brings a question. It's like, you know, like how like as humans, we almost like, it's almost like, how do you say, like when you, not glorifying, but you know, like when you praise a god, how do you call it?
Oh, I know what you mean. Like a deity.
Yeah, like deities. Like, it's almost like a part of our psyche to an extent, you know, like from...
We like to live through people.
Exactly.
Like, that's why like star power and fandom, like we want to live through that person.
Yeah, and it's like, it's almost like from our monkey person, first like ancestor, they used to look up at the sun and be like, oh, and
the
like
scientific bow at term. It, right? Monkey person.
Exactly. This is bro science all the way. And that is just like, till today. And then like the Greeks that had multiple gods, and it's like the idea of like celebrity feels new to an extent, but it's like, if you look at human history, we've always had figures on a pedestal that we looked up. But the thing is like, now it's like these people's flaws are so clear.
Yeah, we're going through such a weird period of like celebrity and fame, aren't we? Like the whole cancel culture, and then like also being aware of it as well. Like Kevin Hart, like just really owning the big mistakes that would have got you instantly removed from celebrity status a while back. It's a very interesting like way that it's all approached now.
It's crazy how it can be just like ripped away from you at any second now.
Yeah.
Where like, I think it's going to be harder and harder to maintain like a celebrity status for a long time, as because humans these days naturally say something stupid or whatever, and then they get canceled and then it's over.
It's just happened to that girl off The Mandalorian. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
She tweeted something and she's just been taken off.
I don't even know what she said.
Oh man, I don't want to misquote, so I might just look it up. From what I was reading, she was comparing the current political situation to Nazi propaganda.
Jeez.
Oh no, that's Gina Carano, the ex MMA fighter.
Yeah, yeah. She's in The Mandalorian.
Oh, okay. I don't even know what Mandalorian is, but I know she was one of the first I could be wrong, so fact check me on this, but like one of the first famous female MMA fighters, like in the early Ronda Rousey day type deal.
Yeah, I don't know too much about her, to be honest. Gina Carano, here we go.
Yeah, so what did she say?
Hang on. She said a few things. Oh, hang on, I'm trying to find the quote. Hang on. I think all the tweets have been deleted.
Oh.
It was branded as anti-Semitic. Hang on, I'm trying to find it.
I wonder if the problem is, I mean, I don't want to say anything because I don't know what she said first.
She said, Jews were beaten in the streets, not by Nazi soldiers, but by their neighbors, even by children. She goes, because history is edited, most people today don't realize that they get to the point where Nazi soldiers could easily round up thousands of Jews. The government first made their own neighbors hate them simply for being Jews. How is that any different from hating someone for their political views? That is a cultural hot potato that I'm not sure Julosophy are qualified
I think that's
to deal
above
with.
My pay grade.
Yeah, I thought we were a jiu-jitsu podcast.
Somehow we've wandered into culture, but you know, she's no longer.
So I'm thinking of buying the jiu-jitsu tutorial leg locks.
Joe Rogan can deal with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna send it over to you, Joe.
you let know how you get on.
Actually, but this is a legit question. I've really been considering, like, sort of like, I want to buy two DVDs. One is the Diamond one by Chandler Ribeiro.
Mm-hmm. Diamond Pressure.
Yeah, and the other concept. Concept.
Diamond Concert Guard. Yeah.
And then the other one is Dean Leeser's leg lock system.
Why would you ignore 50% of the body? Maybe there's something in that.
And when I was looking around, man, the Jiu-Jitsu X website is fire.
Looking good, right?
It's not just looking good, but like the order of like the DVDs is just well broken down. It's like because I find like when I'm watching the BJJ Fanatic ones, shout out to BJJ Fanatics, but a lot of times I have to like rewind, go back and remember the mark of just like to watch the same technique, you know?
I was watching DVD off BJJ Fanatics, and I'm not going to say whose DVD it was. It's kind of funny, though. Midway through, the cameraman started having a coughing fit. And like you can tell, basically he's shown a technique and the guy starts coughing and he looks at the camera with that look of like, should we stop? And like, I think the guy may have been like, no, continue. But then for the next like 5 minutes, he's like...
But I can imagine that they have to record a lot of DVDs and a lot fast for a lot of hours.
Yes, but then they also make a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you would think they'd maybe edit that. I don't know how it works. I'm not very good with those things. But
just do another take.
yeah, true. Yeah. Oh, that's how you do it. Okay.
Imagine. This is the only one. How will we ever get this again?
I think part of like maybe this is just like my intuition. Part of like maybe what helps them get a lot of big names is also the promise that this is going to be quick.
Yeah, it's quick. Or even like let's say 2 days. Like it's 2 days of your life and then it's recurrent income. That like at the end of every month you're going to get a check
and
for
that
your
DVD's
cut of
forever,
DVD
right?
sales, yeah.
You know what I really like, speaking of filming videos, it's like if you look on, this isn't a promotion for Jiu-Jitsu X, but you know, hey, it is what it is. I love how Jiu-Jitsu X got Paulo Miao to come to Legion headquarters, Keenan's gym in San Diego, and film. And I know that Paulo and Keenan had a bit of a, I wouldn't call it like a beef, but you know, like they competed against each other so much. I know that during their brown belt times, like they competed often, they've competed against each other a lot. So it's cool to see that like those things have brought them together for the love of jiu-jitsu and like spreading the knowledge. I think that's super cool. I don't think they ever had like a major rivalry, but you know, like somebody that you're competing against often, you probably, it'd be a bit unusual to invite them over to film a DVD at your house type of deal.
That's true.
So I thought that was super cool.
I imagine it would be harder for Jiu-Jitsu X to get a lot of names because of the whole American Jiu-Jitsu thing. And
we should really talk about the whole American Jiu-Jitsu thing at some point, bearing in mind we have an American Jiu-Jitsu fan on the podcast.
Yep. Yeah.
Have we got time to address it today?
We can start talking about it. I'm down.
Go on then, John. What's your take on it?
Okay, so first of all, give me like frame the question for me, not just like, oh, what do you think of American Jiu-Jitsu? Like, what is your question about American Jiu-Jitsu?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose my take is, what do you make of that phrase, American Jiu-Jitsu? Like, what does that mean to you? But I suppose not just to you, like, well, how do you think it sits within the Jiu-Jitsu community?
Oh, well, I mean, clearly there's a lot of hate for the idea of American Jiu-Jitsu. And that's okay. I think that's okay. You know, it's like... I think that I'm not the right person to give like the historical relevance of American Jiu-Jitsu. If you're looking for that, I'm sure Keenan has some great material on it. And I've seen he's posted quite a few things on like the actual history of grappling in America. I think people think that grappling in America was non-existent before Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu came over. That's not the case. And Keenan can point to like historical facts. I can't, so I'm not the best person to answer that. But do I think the term should be relevant? Yes. Maybe it's fair to remove jiu-jitsu from the name. maybe American jiu-jitsu is not accurate. Maybe it should just be American grappling, something along those lines. Maybe jiu-jitsu is owned by Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I don't know. I think, like, I'm willing to compromise on those things. But the way I see it, I'm happy to use the term American jiu-jitsu. And, yeah, that's my starting argument. There's a lot more to be said.
And the thing is also, who goes under the umbrella? Is it only Americans or people that were trained under Americans trained in America? Like,
so Flow Grappling have done a thing on Flow Grappling. I think it's like an hour-long documentary.
I haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm. They interview some big names. So they interview like Rafael Avart Jr. They interview Keenan. Those are the only two I can think of right now. But they interview a lot of people and ask. And like there's some really, I think they interview John Danaher as well. There's some really interesting things. Like one is the historical relevance. One is also like the marketing and the brand. Like how do we stand out? And there is like those that are saying American Jiu-Jitsu almost like as a counterculture, or almost as like, we are now better. We are now have our own brand. We have American Jiu-Jitsu and like that pushback to it, which is interesting. I kind of feel like it's rubbed people up the wrong way though. Like I feel like they want to, it's like denying the roots or the heritage of it. But then you're getting into like, well, where did Jiu-Jitsu even come from anyway? And like, I'm reading that Closed Guard book at the moment and it starts to question like the relevancy. Like, I haven't got into like the actual nuts and bolts of it, but I think it's fair to say that there was jiu-jitsu and then there was Brazilian jiu-jitsu, started in Brazil, that then became the phenomenon that it is.
So by that logic, you know, it's like if there was jiu-jitsu before Brazilian jiu-jitsu, why can't another branch stem from that?
I guess, you know, how does it differentiate itself from Brazilian jiu-jitsu if it is going to go
If you look at the top American jiu-jitsu, modern American jiu-jitsu players, I think they do have a unique style. I mean,
yeah, and I think I would just argue that it's just an evolution of Brazilian jiu-jitsu maybe taking place in America.
And also, but then couldn't you say Brazilian jiu-jitsu is just an evolution of the original jiu-jitsu?
100%. Yeah, which is why the smartest thing I've said heard was from coach where he was like, it's just jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fair. That's fair. We can totally play that game. But, you know, it's like I think if people were going to be up in arms about these things, then they should have been up in arms, you know, like when Eddie Bravo started 10th Planet. And I think they were.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they kind of like, they rebelled against it. They were like, nah, he's like trying to do all this stuff. He's like trying to be different. He's like trying to take it away. And he was always like, just trying to innovate. Like, I'm just trying to find new ways of doing it.
Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think there is an element of marketing here. And I think, you know, like Keenan is, in my opinion, like a marketing master. He's changed like marketing for jiu-jitsu dramatically. I think he's, you know, even Jiu-Jitsu X, like the way it's formatted using like modern web design techniques.
He's doing a good job of presenting it, right? Like he's tapping into that online content market, which is exceptionally lucrative and also beneficial. Like to have all of the instructionals online, like that's just good for anyone, right?
Yeah, and I think jiu-jitsu is growing. Sorry, Iggy, I've like cut you off like four times. But I think, you know, jiu-jitsu is so huge in America right now. It is growing so rapidly that it only makes sense to like, in a way, to rally the troops by calling it American jiu-jitsu. I think it's going to get even more Americans to be like, yeah, let's go wrestle.
As long as it's under the American banner and the American flag.
I don't know. I think the marketing part of it plays a big part because we are talking about it. If you think about it, Keenan Cornelius, he's like amazing.
Yeah.
But he's not like, his name is like thrown around way more often than a lot more world champions. Like people that are like, have like way more.
He does have a bit of a reputation, celebrated. Doesn't he?
Yeah. So like, in a way, like I feel like he knows who he's speaking to, and he also knows. It's almost like he's pulling the lapel in the right way on the internet. You know, it's like it's really impressive, but he knows how to start discussions.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that a small part of like it not wanting to be called that is the whole like how America is perceived. like they take something, they own it, they make it. They're like, it's almost like the monster that absorbs it, and it's all about like America and stuff like this. There is, I reckon that's playing a large part of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would not argue with that. I think that's fair, and that's probably why there's such pushback. It's probably frustrating to see another thing that America is trying to claim as their own, or it just seems like another thing. Oh, you got to be kidding me.
And it's also, as soon as you start to introduce money, like,
yeah,
could it threaten, you know, the money to be made for an inherently Brazilian run, like, I don't want to say organization, but like essentially it is, like,
totally. And that's the true. American Jiu-Jitsu Federation tournaments, for example.
Can you imagine? Fairly enough, it's like, I think America is one of the biggest markets for Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, I was watching that like hour-long documentary on YouTube, and it was like the heart of America is happening like in and around, the heart of Jiu-Jitsu is now happening in America, in and around like San Diego, California, that area. That's like where it's taking place.
I imagine that in California alone, there's probably like 50 jiu-jitsu gyms.
Yeah, and you know, big name, high level jiu-jitsu gyms.
So
ironically, you know, founded by Brazilians.
Yeah,
a lot of these gyms.
So here comes the question: like, if there is a thing like American jiu-jitsu, would like all the other people who are not Americans lose their gyms? And you know, sort of.
Nah.
No,
I don't think so.
It would never take over. What you might get is like more of an American like way of presenting it and selling it.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's still jiu-jitsu, right? Like armbar's an armbar, no matter what you call it. Like,
yeah, it's like the whole thing with Khabib, for example, doing being a white belt.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah.
I think we could do a whole episode on this, and I'd love to do that.
I feel like we probably should, and yeah. I feel like we should maybe do do something we never do, which is some research.
Actually, yeah. there is something really interesting. I went on a walk with my neighbor, and we're walking, we're chatting, and she started asking me a lot about jiu-jitsu history. I started stuttering. Right?
Yeah, because it is complicated.
And then she said, how come you're philosophy and you don't know these basic questions?
Good point.
Yes and no. I think like a few things. At first, I was like a little self-conscious about it. She's right. But at the same time, I think if we are honest,
yeah,
this we're not going to learn all these things overnight.
No.
And this podcast is also like a journal of us learning. So one day when we know all these things, we can look back and do it. But it's a very good point that now I know, oh, I don't actually know these things.
Yeah,
and
I mean, we've never pretended that we do know.
Yeah.
We've never presented ourselves as like jiu-jitsu oracles, because we're not. And also it's a journey. Like, mm-hmm. we're asking these questions. We can go away and find out. We can come back and talk about it.
So if you're listening to this and we make some mistakes, please let us know. Let us know on Instagram. Let us know on Reddit. And we really appreciate it, because we are learning with you. This is like in Portuguese they say the resenha, you know, like after the rolls, everybody sits back and just chats. This is the resenha. So yeah, like and you are chilling here with us. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
It's lovely to have Mr. John Jitsu back in the fold.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's been awesome. Man, hope to do it again very soon.
We should get you back again. We should do the American Jiu-Jitsu one, and maybe, just maybe, if our good friend and follower of the podcast, Josh Hinger, is listening.
Yeah, maybe him and I can team up against you guys.
Maybe he could pull some weight.
Wait, one thing I almost forgot. So guys, if you're listening to this, please drop us a review on iTunes. That would be amazing.
We got to get reviews now, do we?
Yeah, like just like, you know, like what you think of
already the asking for handouts.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it makes a big help on the podcast, especially like to grow it. And also, 5 stars, maybe, you know?
Like, subscribe, give us a follow. Yeah,
subscribe, give us a follow. Instagram.
All that good stuff.
Facebook.
We have a Reddit account now, don't we?
Yeah, the Reddit is popping. It's really nice.
Do you see Mikey Musumeci drop by, John?
Yeah, I did. Amazing.
Got involved.
And this, my friend who lives in Essex, told me that his brother was asking him about the gorilla and the chimp and the bear.
Man, I love that.
Yeah, through that's so random. But anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening. Stay safe in the streets.